Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the just-released study by scientists at Stanford, MIT, and the Department of Energy, published in the journal Science, that finds methane leaks negate the benefits of natural gas as a fuel for vehicles. The lead author of this study, Adam Brandt, a professor in the Department of Energy Resources at Stanford University, joins us to discuss the downside of the current binge in the fracking, drilling, production, and distribution of natural gas, which is promoted as a clean energy alternative. But the study finds that the leakage of methane, which is a 30 times more potent greenhouse gas than CO2, offsets the benefits of burning natural gas instead of diesel. Then we will speak with Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, who is a climate scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, about President Obama's announcement on Friday in drought-stricken Fresno, California, of a $1 billion climate resiliency program to help farmers deal with the effects of global warming. We will discuss the challenge of selling climate change to rural red state America, given the attitude of the Republican congressman who represents Fresno, whose response to the president's initiative is that global warming is nonsense. Then finally, Jeremy Scahill joins us in the studio to discuss his Academy Award-nominated feature documentary, Dirty Wars, and his new media venture, First Look Media, with Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras, and the digital magazine they publish, The Intercept, where he has an article with Glenn Greenwald, the NSA's secret role in the U.S. assassination program. We'll examine the shadow world of JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, and the role of U.S. secret warriors who now operate in between 70 and 120 countries at any one time. And joining us now is Adam Brandt, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Energy Resources at Stanford University, who works on reducing the environmental impacts of energy systems, more specifically understanding, measuring, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions from fossil energy sources, including reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, energy supply, and from power systems. He is the lead author of a study published in the journal Science, which was conducted by scientists at Stanford, MIT, and the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory. Welcome to Background Briefing, Adam Brandt.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And this study that you've come up with, specifically, it's the transportation grid, if you will, in terms of switching from diesel to natural gas that you looked at. Because, you know, we see buses going by all the time with signs saying that powered by clean natural gas. And fleets of trucks now are switching over. So give us a sense of what this finding is in terms of whether or not there are advantages to natural gas, or whether these advantages are offset by the leakage of methane.
Sure. I can talk about that. To back up a second, the genesis of the study was to try to understand and compile evidence from a whole range of studies that have come out recently about natural gas leakage. There's been a lot of controversy, a lot of studies, and a lot of variability between the results that make it really hard to judge what's happening. And so the goal of our study was to assemble a group of experts. We had about 15 people on the team to assess what we know and what we don't know about natural gas leakage. So we looked at over 200 scientific articles and tried to compile them on a consistent basis. One of the interesting things we found, or the key result that we found, is that it appears that the Environmental Protection Agency is underestimating methane leakage from natural gas systems. We think the EPA is underestimating methane leakage overall by about 50%. So you need to basically increase methane emissions by about 1.5 to match what we observe in the atmosphere. We don't know how much of this comes from natural gas, but there's a lot of evidence natural gas is a big contributor. When you run the numbers, what it looks like is that natural gas is still a good idea to use in the power sector. So if we're going to replace a coal-fired power plant, from a climate perspective, this is still a good idea. But if we're going to replace a diesel bus or a diesel truck, we think it's quite likely that the leakage rate from the gas system is sufficiently high that that doesn't make sense from a climate basis. We wanted to be really clear in the study, though, that it's only a climate story we're telling. There's lots of other reasons to like natural gas buses in our cities. They improve our air quality. They're much nicer to ride on. Human health impacts are much less, et cetera. So there's a variety of reasons to like natural gas buses. But from a climate perspective, we think they're not likely to be beneficial.
So when you add up, though, all of the nodes in the from the well to the bus or to the gas in your home or to the gas in the power plant, etc., there are all of these nodes where there could be leakage. I guess in every time at the bus depot they fill up the natural gas bottles, sure, there must be some leakage. I know in other countries like Australia, they've for the longest time you've had the alternative at every gas pump. You can also get along with gasoline, you can get CNG or liquid natural gas, they're like a nozzle pump that you have at the gas station. I know that every oil well also they flare off natural gas. So there's all kinds of leakage. Has anybody done a holistic study of the entire footprint of natural gas?
People have tried. The last major study was in the early 1990s, and that was commissioned by EPA, so it's about 20 years old now. Since then, there have been a variety of small studies, including a number of studies in the Los Angeles region, but none have been comprehensive. These studies tend to be quite expensive to undertake, and they're quite challenging. And so this is why there's so much uncertainty. We have a sense that the leakage rate is higher from the natural gas system than EPA is estimating. We don't actually know where this is coming from, what the exact cause is. There's a lot of speculation about leakage at natural gas wells, from pipelines, from processing plants, even from our homes and businesses. And there's evidence for all of these sources. We just don't know which one is contributing or if they're all contributing.
Well, my understanding is that the gas that comes into your home, they actually put an odor in because it's otherwise undetectable, at least by smell. Is that true?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yes. What you smell when you have a gas leak in your home is an artificial odorant that's added to the gas to make sure you know if your house is filling up with explosive gas. Otherwise, you won't be able to notice. And so this is added during the processing or distribution stages. And so leakage upstream of that, or leakage before they add this odorant, you're not going to smell this at a natural gas well. This doesn't come out of the ground. It's added.
So is there any correlation then between this boom that's going on now with natural gas drilling and fracking? Because one would think that if you are, you know, putting high pressure water and chemicals underground at tremendously high pressures that create these fissures, that they may not always necessarily crack open right at the wellhead. It's possible that fissures are created elsewhere. Is there any work going on in detecting the collateral damage, if you will, from the fracking boom?
There is, yeah, and there's a lot of work ongoing on that. There's a couple of things that we know right now. One, there was a recent study that was published that suggested if emissions controls technology or is applied at hydrofracturing sites, that the emissions can be quite low. That only has limited relevance right now because not all operators use these reduced emissions technologies. However, EPA is going to require them to use these starting in 2015. So in about 10 months from now, all operators across the country will have to use these technologies. Once those are in place, we think that hydrofracturing, at least from an air emissions perspective, is likely to not be a significant contributor to the problem. As of now, it's unclear how big of a contributor it is to the problem, but it doesn't appear to be major. This actually appears to be a problem with the much larger natural gas system, not just with fracking. So we've got almost 500,000 wells operating in the country. We actually have literally millions of miles of pipeline in the country. Especially under our cities, there's lots of small pipelines, lots of miles of small pipeline. And so it's a really complex system, and there's a lot of points for leakage. And so what it appears is that, you know, one part of the system, hydrofracturing, for example, is not likely to be the major contributor. The other concern with hydraulic fracturing is actually contamination of water. And this can occur through basically leakage around the well. So you'll get a fissure around the well that can result in gas escaping into an aquifer. There has been some evidence found of this, but the extent to which this happens is pretty unclear at this point.
And again, I'm speaking with Adam Brandt, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Energy Resources at Stanford University, and he is the lead author of a study published in the journal Science, which was conducted by scientists at Stanford, MIT, and the Department of Energy National Renewable Energy Laboratory on the extent of methane leakage, and particularly in the transportation grid, whether the benefits of burning cleaner natural gas as opposed to diesel are offset by the leakage of methane, which is 30 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Now, my understanding is that methane molecules last a long time. They eventually break down into CO2, do they not? But they can last, for up to 800 years?
No, actually methane is a relatively short-lived molecule in the atmosphere. So methane is emitted to the atmosphere, and about half of it will be gone over a period of 10 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
But you're correct that when it breaks down, it actually breaks down to CO2. So it has a very large impact in the short term, and this short-term impact is much, much larger than CO2. But because it only lasts for a short time period, the impact over, let's say, 100 years, which is the most typical climate change assessment period, is not as large as the immediate impact. The immediate impact of methane is closer to 100 times that of CO2. But CO2 will last for 1,000 years in the atmosphere, whereas methane lasts for decades.
Well, just in closing, though, do we have a sense of whether this silent, odorless gas, which is so much more destructive in terms of greenhouse gas, how much it is contributing to climate change? I mean, it's just at this point a guess, is it?
We have some sense of how much it's contributing to the overall climate problem because we have a decent sense of what we observe in the air. So we know what's out there in the atmosphere, and we can fly airplanes and test this. Well, the hard part is actually knowing exactly where it's coming from, and that's what a lot of people are working on, is to try to pinpoint the source of this methane that we see in the atmosphere. There's good evidence that a large fraction of the leakage may come from a small fraction of the sources, and this is actually quite beneficial. That it appears that if we invent a technology to find these leaks very cheaply and quickly, that companies can go out and fix these large leaks, and large leaks can contribute a large fraction of the problem. So that's what we're working towards in the future, is to try to solve the problem by inventing ways to find these leaks at very low cost.
Well, Adam Brandt, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Adam Brandt, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Energy Resources at Stanford University, who works on reducing the environmental impact of energy systems, more specifically understanding, measuring, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions from fossil energy sources, including reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, energy supply, and from power systems. He's the lead author of a study published in the journal Science, which was conducted by scientists at Stanford, MIT, and the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how President Obama can sell climate change to red state rural America.